Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am your host, Cy Kellett. The press just doesn't get religion. That's a tagline for getreligion.org, a site that focuses on how the mainstream press covers religion in news, politics, entertainment, business, and sports. Our guest today is the founder of getreligion.org, Terry Mattingly, is a journalist who covers religion news. He's in the 30th year of writing his column on religion for the Universal Syndicate. And he also directs, he's the senior fellow for media and religion at King's College in New York City, where he teaches journalism. Terry Mattingly, thank you for being with us on Catholic Answers Focus.
Very glad to be here.
You've been covering religion for a long time, and now for a long time you've been covering the people who cover religion. And those are two kind of different vocations. Would you agree?
Well, it means I care very deeply about the same subject. I made the decision to try to become a professional religion writer all the way back during my undergraduate years. And then that decision affected my decision to do two different master's degrees. I did a degree at Baylor University in Texas in their Department of Church-State Studies, which was an interdisciplinary degree in theology, political science, history, and law, all related to church-state. And then 4 years later, after working in a newspaper for a while in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, I did a master's in mass communication and journalism. And since I had already been a journalist for a while, they let me place out of a couple of basic courses. So they let me do a class in both the Jewish studies program and the Catholic studies program. I grew up Southern Baptist in Texas, and I figured I spoke pretty fluent evangelical. But I wanted to look. I took some classes that affected trends, say 20th century trends in Judaism and Catholicism, post-Vatican II Catholicism primarily. And so I already knew that that was something I wanted to do. So I worked in the field full-time for a while, both in Charlotte, North Carolina, and in primarily at the Rocky Mountain News in Denver. And then I went into teaching, ironically, first teaching in a seminary, Denver Theological Seminary in Denver, Colorado. I had already started writing my nationally syndicated column at that time. So ever since then, I have been a combination of a teacher and still a secular mainstream newspaper columnist. Yeah. At the same time, it's been an interesting combination for a couple of decades now.
Well, maybe the casual kind of consumer of mainstream media, watching on television or listening on the radio or reading newspapers or now more and more reading online, might have, I would propose to you, a kind of low-grade ongoing annoyance with the media about the way religion is covered, but not be able to fully articulate what it is that's annoying about that. Do you think that my proposition is correct, that there is this kind of general sense of, no, they're not getting it right for among those who actually practice religions? And two, is it warranted?
Well, first of all, there's an annoyance that comes before that. All the way back in the early 1980s, when I did my graduate project at the University of Illinois, I wrote it about the fact that the media, for the most part, wasn't even trying to cover religion all that seriously.
Yeah.
I wrote a piece, I wrote like a 80-page paper that was shortened and turned into a cover story for a magazine called The Quill, the national magazine of the Society of Professional Journalists. And it was about why don't newspapers even try to cover religion. And to this date, television networks have made little or no effort at all to cover religion in a systematic way. So that piece in 1982 was kind of my calling card for opening this discussion. And the discussion originally was, why don't they even try? Now, this issue of being able to feel this kind of toothache, nagging pain if you're a religious believer in any tradition, especially if you're a traditional religious believer in one of the world religions. The way we've expressed that at Get Religion, in the very first essay I wrote for the website, I introduced a term that we call a religion ghost.
Yeah.
And a ghost is when you're reading a story and you can tell that there's some aspect of this story that the people who wrote it and edited it, they just don't get it. There's a religion theme. There's crucial religious factual material or something related to this story. But the people that are writing, editing the story don't know that. So we say that the story at that point is haunted by religion. And religion ghosts has become one of the primary preoccupations of Get Religion, is trying to spot them and talk about them. And a lot of people, that's the source of the pain. It's not even that they're messing up the coverage, that they're making mistakes. It's that they don't seem to know what they don't know.
Right.
When it comes to religion, the great CBS commentator and PBS for a while, the great Bill Moyers, who is actually a liberal Baptist pastor way back in his heritage, before he worked in the White House with LBJ. Bill Moyers has a great image for this, which I frequently use with people and with my students. Bill Moyers likes to say that the mainstream press is tone deaf to the music of religion.
Oh, yeah.
It's all around them. They're hearing something, but they just don't hear the melody. I've always said that religion coverage is a very complicated thing. It's just as complicated as sports or politics or science or whatever. Yet at the same time, there's an emotional quality to it that seems to run deep, and it's hard for many journalists to accept it or to embrace it. I've always said that religion coverage is like a combination of politics and opera. I mean, in the sense that it has all of the technical language and all of the complications and the law, the legal aspects and all that stuff. I mean, getting into a discussion of Catholic canon law with someone who has no idea that it even exists, you can imagine how frustrating right. that must be to reporters. And once again, they don't know what they don't know.
So they
can't even ask questions, because they don't know enough about it to even know that they need to ask the question. Does that make sense?
It does indeed make sense, but it's hard to get the mind around how can they be so ignorant? Like what would be the cause of an entire profession not understanding a part of the world that they live in?
Well, I mean, it's very complicated stuff. I mean, let's be honest here. Can you imagine trying to, like, put myself in Denver? When I was in Denver, I had working research folders on 86 different religious movements and traditions just in Colorado.
Wow.
I mean, and that included different parachurch groups and breakoffs from different things and, you know, new Catholic churches and feminist Catholic churches and neo-pagan Catholic churches and, you know, and you had all that. And they all use a lot of the same language, but they may even use it totally differently. When I was preparing for an interview with two of the 12 disciples, 12 apostles, I should say, of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I knew a little bit about Mormonism from my readings in graduate school in new religious movements, but I think I must have read 2,000 pages of material to get ready for that interview. Well, professional religion writers are dedicated to doing that kind of work. Most of the time, the problem is that the religion coverage you read, most, especially when it comes to politics or any big subjects that the media thinks it takes seriously, you're probably reading coverage by people who have zero training or zero experience covering religion.
But could they get away with a similar thing, say, in covering science? Like when you talk about the complexity of it, it's probably
They're capable of messing up a lot of things. There are a lot of complicated subjects. The bigger question to me is when you look at how important religion is to American life, politics, education, etc. When you look at how, you know, important that is, the question is why more newsrooms don't seek out and hire experienced, in some cases award-winning, religion writers.
Right.
But there's another, there's an X factor here, a special kind of reticence. I've always said that, you know, religion topics give editors sweaty palms. They're uncomfortable dealing with them. And that's where the opera thing comes in. That's where the fact that there's a beauty and an emotion and a depth to religion, that if you don't hear that music, the way Bill Moyers put it, if you don't hear that music, you just don't get it. I mean, you're at this event, and they're arguing about some social issue, and then someone gets up and starts kind of preaching about some theme in the theology, or let's say in a Catholic setting, someone makes a reference to John Paul II's theology of the body, and all of a sudden people are nodding, and some people are even crying, and the reporter is sitting there going, what the heck?
Yeah, right. It's a foreign world.
What are they talking about?
Right.
And, you know, and if you don't have experience on the beat, there's that phrase again, they don't know what they don't know. So it takes experience to even realize what you don't know and to think to ask about it.
Yep. And is that part of what Get Religion, or do you think that that is part of what actually happens as a consequence of GetReligion.org, that there may,
well,
that an editor or a writer could, you know, if I were a religion reporter, I would read that every day to get a sense of, do you have
well,
a sense
I
that
think
they are?
To some degree, a lot of journalists think we're too negative and that we criticize too much, but there is a lot of stuff to criticize and to correct
right.
in this field. We've also noted, and we've stated it openly, that newsrooms that have professional, trained, veteran religion reporters, we don't end up criticizing them as much.
Yeah.
It's more like a dialogue, you know, about how to cover difficult subjects or something like that. And we may disagree with what they chose to do, but that's a completely different situation than a news organization that just doesn't get it. I mean, they don't hear the music. Now, back to this question of why don't they hire a pro, this is where I just totally lose it. And there have been times, you know, when you've been doing this kind of work for 40 years, you unfortunately build up a pretty decent stash of war stories. But a couple of decades ago, we had a classic example. The Washington Post was seeking a new religion reporter. And they posted this in their newsroom first before they put it out. And someone read it and sent a copy of the notice to a friend of mine by fax. And so we actually know the wording of this notice. And it became kind of infamous because it said, you know, wanted religion reporter, blah, 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 blah. And then there was a famous phrase, the ideal candidate, stress ideal, the ideal candidate for this position need not be an expert, religious or an expert in religion. Need not be personally religious or an expert in religion. Now, the first half of that equation, that they don't need to be religious, I agree with that. I mean, I know some fabulous religion reporters who themselves are not religious believers. And I have met devout religious believers through the years that want to be journalists, but they couldn't write or report their way out of a paper bag.
Yeah.
They just didn't get journalism. So I'm not upset that they were open to having a religion writer who was not personally devout. I mean, we're talking a professional position here, not someone who's going to write Bible commentaries. It was the second half of the equation that ticked me off, and that was the part about the ideal candidate was not necessarily an expert in religion.
Right, right. How is that an ideal? It would be, again,
how is that an ideal?
Yeah.
How is ignorance of the subject a plus?
Yeah. That's right.
I mean, so every, you know, look at it this way. Can you imagine the Washington Post putting up a notice that says, you know, wanted Supreme Court reporter, the ideal candidate for this position is not a lawyer and has no extensive interest in the field of law.
Right. Right. Yes.
Wanted NFL reporter to cover the Washington Redskins or whatever the name of the team is soon. When they should change it. Wanted NFL reporter, the ideal candidate for this job, does not like football and has no interest and has made no efforts to learn about it.
Right. It's
crazy.
It's mind-boggling.
The New York Times, just a couple of weeks ago, the New York Times put out that it was going to hire a second religion reporter, base them out in the American heartland somewhere, all of which is good. But in their notice, it said, once again, the candidate for this job need not be an expert on doctrine.
Oh, yeah. So,
well, wouldn't it help to know a little bit about what some of these groups believe?
Right. Yeah.
If you're going to try to tell the difference between a Shia Muslim and a Sunni Muslim, shouldn't you know something about the differences in those approaches to the faith? Shouldn't you know that Hasidic Jews are not the same people you meet when you go down to a Reform temple?
Well, let me ask you this, though. What about the person who will say to you, okay, but Terry, are you being a little naive in that when you cite the Washington Post and the New York Times, the fact is that those editors there very likely have a kind of moral agenda that is actually contradictory to what the major American religious groups would propose. And so it's not just a matter of ignorance, or there's a matter of not wanting to give a fair shake to moral positions that they find objectionable.
Well, first of all, there are a lot of journalists in major newsrooms that you simply can't make that statement. They care deeply about their craft. They care deeply about balance and accuracy and fairness. So it's simplistic to say that situation explains everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's more complex than that. Yet at the same time, there has been evidence through the year that the closer you get to moral and cultural and religious issues, specifically on hot-button topics, such as abortion used to be the really crucial thing that everybody tested for in media bias studies. I would say that same-sex marriage, LGBTQ issues now have kind of leapt over that,
right,
in terms of importance. And we are now several years after an amazing moment that led to another Get Religion slang term, which was Bill Keller, the editor of the New York Times, retired. And a couple of days after he retired, he was interviewed at a forum in Austin, Texas, and was asked point blank, did your newsroom slant coverage to the left? And he gave a very complex answer. He said, I believe we're a liberal paper in the same sense that liberal arts colleges are liberal. We are kind of culturally liberal. And then he named some issues, and one of them was, he said, same-sex marriage. He named issues related to creation and kind of did a put-down of creationism, thinking that all religious believers might somehow fit under that label, as the New York Times might define it. And the interviewer came back and said, do you slant the news to the left? And Keller said, other than those kinds of cultural and moral issues, I don't believe we do.
Oh, wow.
Other than.
Right.
Now, at which point in the column I wrote about that, I stressed, well, whoa, stop and think about American politics post Roe v. Wade. Other than. I mean, what are the major moral and social issues in American life right now that you're saying it's okay to slant on? Well, good grief, what percentage of American politics, especially presidential politics, is linked to concerns about the U.S. Supreme Court, specifically relating to life issues, abortion, same-sex marriage, gay rights, religious liberty? In other words, the whole world, I mean, think about all the issues that come up in public schools related. Now we're beginning to see them pop up in businesses and sports related to the lives of religious believers. Well, under what he said, it's okay to slant the news on all of those subjects because at the New York Times, because it's a liberal, urbane newspaper. It's socially and culturally liberal. You just slanted about half of what matters in American public life and disputes at this point.
Right.
So thus at Get Religion, we created a term called Kellerism. And Kellerism is the journalistic doctrine that says, basically, you don't have to do fair, accurate, and balanced coverage of people that you have already decided are wrong.
Right. That's and you do get.
In other words,
right.
Error has no rights.
Right, and you,
as my friend Rodrier constantly states at his blog, you don't have to do accurate coverage of people that are wrong.
Right, and I think for religious people, certainly for those of us who are Catholics, the coverage of the whole gay marriage debate, for example, was, it seemed, even in the news reporting, not in just the opinion reporting, but it seemed in the news reporting that there was a right position and a wrong position, and we were in the wrong position.
Well, I mean, simply stated, pardon me, I just dropped my phone.
Oh.
Simply stated, if sexual orientation equals race, what they have been saying all along is that traditional religious believers in the major world religions are bigots.
Yes, right.
And that's the, and once you've crossed that line, why give fair coverage? Why give equal coverage to bigots?
Yeah.
And I think that once again, this is true for some journalists, that this is their stance. The online publication BuzzFeed has in its style book that governs work in its newsroom, in the newsroom style book, it states that there's no need to be balanced on issues related to LGBTQ issues or abortion. In other words, they have an editorial stance at the website that affects how you then do news coverage,
right,
of those issues, where traditionally through the years, people separated editorial stances from news stances.
And that seems to be less and less the case. But I wonder about the other side of that, that advocacy journalism often, it seems to me, is better coverage of religion, maybe because it's not trying to be, I don't know, it's not trying to kind of cover its all the bases. It's giving you an angle so that if you have, you know, whether it's the Nation or the National Review, or, you know, covering from from an advocate's point of view, I think often is liberating for religion reporters.
Well, I think that it's, you know, that those European style publications, advocacy publications, I think those are very important. The issue, though, is what happens to our national discourse when we have lost kind of the main river of shared information. If you've read any of the studies about the last couple of presidential elections, and this last one for sure, Americans no longer live in the same country when it comes to getting their information. News is sourced. They have no idea what people on the other side of these issues believe, because they are choosing to only read the publications that reinforce the points of view they already have.
Right.
And that's Fox News versus MSNBC. That's, well, I mean, I would say the New York Times right now on a lot of issues functions on a lot of issues. Notice I said a lot of them, not all of them. The New York Times on some issues functions as an advocacy publication. Its own public editor, in a famous quote, and this guy was a liberal, this he stated, our coverage of gay rights issues, quote, approaches cheerleading, unquote.
Yeah, right, right.
Now, but see, here's an important issue. We've had a major development on this. Even as you and I talk, one of the items that's on the news is that the New York Times today announced that they are killing the position of the public editor.
Wow.
The person who is supposed to represent the readers when they complain
and that,
about issues in the coverage.
And that was
so
created.
The very position.
Wasn't that created
the
after?
The very position that has given the best voice to concerns about it, that position is now being discontinued.
And there was a scandal. Wasn't that the Jason?
That's what led to it.
The
woman, Liz Spad, who's been, has held that position until today, she did a brilliant job. We quoted her extensively. I would urge readers to go to getreligion.org and do a search for her name, S-P-A-Y-D, Liz Spad. And read some of the stuff she wrote. Now, once again, this woman is a liberal's liberal, but she was writing essays by liberal New York Times readers, not writing essays about conservatives criticizing the paper. She was writing essays about liberals criticizing the paper for having lost its sense of balance and fairness and tuning out about half of American life as basically not being worthy of coverage, which led to them not being able to see the Trump movement coming and not seeing, I would argue, not seeing in particular the people who reluctantly voted for Trump, who didn't want to, but who felt they had no chance to do otherwise. They had no choice.
Right, right.
So this led to a famous quote by the current executive editor, who in an interview with National Public Radio at one point just simply said, "I think our elite newspapers, and we're one of them, we don't get religion."
Wow. Well, that's what
we don't understand. We don't understand the role that religion plays in the lives of millions and millions of Americans.
Well, then, let me ask you about one other thing before we. I'd like to talk to you about any what might be the way forward.
And I've got a concluding point I really want to talk to your listeners about. But go ahead.
Okay, no, we've got plenty of time. But I did want to get to this because when I read Get Religion, one of the things that seems to come up again and again is this treatment of what, for many of us, is normal religious behavior or experiences or ideas as exotic. Is that? Where does that come from? You know, it's almost like you're reporting on some exotic species when you report on like mainstream Catholic belief.
Yeah, we call it the National Geographic approach.
Right.
You've landed in a foreign country and you're covering a strange tribe. When I was young, long ago, when Jimmy Carter burst onto the scene, and at that point in my life, I was a Southern Baptist. The son of my father is a Southern Baptist minister. And I'm now a convert to Eastern Orthodoxy, which is quite a religious pilgrimage in terms of tradition, but it makes sense when you lived the life I've lived. But anyway, I remember, I'll never forget, one night on the news when Jimmy Carter was running for president, and there had been that famous interview where he said that he was a born-again Christian, and the press just freaked. Yeah. Because now, all of a sudden, we had a form of traditional conservative Christianity, even though Carter was a progressive within that tradition, and really is today, it was like, you know, the heathens were coming in to sack Rome.
Right.
Now here come the Vandals, because politics is real. Politics is like the religion of the American newsroom. It's the only thing that's real and the only thing that's allowed to affect life, whereas religion is mythology and emotions and just a bunch of stories. To some journalists, not all, I got to keep making that point.
Yes.
Well, on the evening news, I remember I was watching ABC News, which in that era, what I think the anchor would have been Howard K. Smith. And at the end of this report on Carter, the anchor looked into the camera with this earnest look on his face and said, "ABC News is investigating the born again Christians and will have a report in a future broadcast." I mean, you would never know that we're talking about 40% of the American population.
All around you.
Identifies as a born-again Christian.
Right.
It was like Martians had landed, and they were going to have to try to go cover the little green men who suddenly had somebody running for president. It's like, how do you – I mean, I know there are a lot of obscure forms of religion, but how do you have a newsroom anywhere in America – and not have people in it who are basically Protestant, evangelical, born-again Christians.
Right, right.
I mean, how does that happen?
How does it happen?
Well, part of it is the fault of churches. Part of it is the fact that our churches have never taken journalism and mass media seriously. Name me a Catholic university in America, let alone a conservative one, that has an outstanding journalism program.
Like right now? Like just off
yeah.
top? Up, that would be – I have no clue. I'm not a
there,
clue.
There are zero.
Okay.
Franciscan University has one professor who knows quite a bit about journalism, and I've worked with some excellent students from Franciscan. But it's just not a part of religious people's radar. Another one of my beaches to die on, so to speak, in addition to the importance of the religion beat, is trying to get religious colleges and universities – to take media seriously and to take journalism seriously, because it would help if we had religious colleges in a lot of different traditions producing qualified mainstream reporters and editors. But they don't exist. I've done lots of work with the 100-plus school network, the Council of Christian Colleges and Universities, that's who I taught for, running the Washington Journalism Center in one form or another for 20 years. And when I first broke into teaching as a part of that network, there were like five journalism professors out of 100-plus schools that I could find who had any experience at all in the mainstream press.
Oh, yeah.
Had ever worked a day.
So we can kind of ghettoize ourselves. We can say, well, that's not where we go.
And the same thing happens in screenwriting and in a lot of other things. So basically, we have a blind spot with two sides. The American press doesn't appreciate half the First Amendment, doesn't appreciate the religious exercise, the free exercise of religion half of the First Amendment, and respect the role that religion plays in American life and culture. But at the same time, way too many, once again, not all, but lots, way too many religious leaders have zero respect for the constitutionally protected role that journalism plays in our society. The two halves of the First Amendment don't get along.
Yeah,
and
I see.
It's having a horrible impact on our public discourse and our public life here in America.
I think that's a very helpful point, Terry, because it's easy to blame, and it's harder to go, wait a second, what are we doing to address this problem?
Right.
So I want to move to who's doing
well. That's where I wanted you to go. Okay. I do have one or two suggestions here for what people can do.
Okay, good.
So number one, I really think if they have any contact with Catholic schools, if they're alums of major Catholic colleges or universities, alumni have every right to call those schools up and say, I'm very concerned about this. What are you doing to try to have a mainstream impact in fields such as journalism, screenwriting, popular music, and other crucial forms of culture creation in this society we live in? What are you doing? And we would love to have more students from major Catholic schools, conservative Catholic schools even, in the program in Washington, D.C., where I still teach, that grew out of the Washington program. At the same time, I think every Catholic parish, especially if it's in a major city where there is an important newspaper, but all newspapers are important if they're your major source of news, I think every major Catholic parish should have two or three people who are designated as people who read the paper and who talk to their priest and who call up the paper and say, A, we'd really like to praise the story you ran the other day. You got this part really right. Thank you very much. Or call up and say, you ran a story the other day about natural family planning, and it's like the person never talked to anybody in a traditional Catholic setting that understood what that doctrine's actually about.
Yeah.
Or has no idea of who Cardinal Bernardine was and what consistent life ethic was, or, you know, has never heard of John Paul II writing on Veritas Splendor or some of these critical things that have happened, you know, in Catholic life and culture. You should have people on in your parishes who call up and in a constructive way interact with editors. And to where eventually if an editor is saying, well, we're doing this story, boy, that's a complicated Catholic story, make sure you call so-and-so and find out who would be some decent, informed people to interview.
Yes, I see.
This is how gay rights groups do it. This is how environmental groups do it. You better believe they're in the speed dials of a lot of these editors.
Right.
When it comes time to covering these stories. There is no excuse for major religious organizations in America not having constructive interaction
with their newspaper
editors.
And is now what's the future of newspapers though? I mean, is that the place, are they, is that still
they still generate about 80% of the independently reported information you see in other media. I mean, it's shocking how little information comes out of your typical local TV station. I mean, they may have 5 to 10, 12 reporters whereas the newspaper in the same area, even after cuts due to the advertising crisis we're in, the internet-based crisis we're in, they're still going to have three or four times that number of reporters. In most American communities, the local newspaper generates the vast majority of the news. And like I said, the national level television stations and networks are still doing nothing with religion. They haven't even opened the door. ABC News had a religion reporter for a couple of years, and her work was frankly very good. The late Peter Jennings once told me that this reporter's stories gathered more feedback, more positive feedback from listeners and readers and viewers than anything else the newsroom was doing. Yet the minute they had a cutback, the management of the newsroom decided to cut that position.
Mm-hmm. So if they
don't get it.
They don't. They need to know there's a constituency and a constituency that cares.
But how will they ever know that if our religious organizations do not interact with them in a constructive and intentional mm-hmm. manner?
And so now 30 years you've been doing this, and I want to make sure I mention something. Terry Mattingly's columns for Universal Syndicate, which previously was Scripps Howard News Service, they are gathered in one place, decades of them. And you just go to tmatt.net. That's the letter T-M-A-T-T.net, and you can get the whole history. Is that right? You can get the whole history of them there?
Basically, back to the time of the creation of the web. I mean, when the web kind of came into existence as a public phenomena in like 1993, 1994, that was when the website was created. I was already writing the columns out in Denver for a couple of years before that.
And so when you, 3 decades now of covering this part of American life and both covering religion.
That's just in that column. I had another decade ahead of that as a reporter.
Oh, so four decades covering this important. So if you could maybe tell us what are the trajectories you see, things that we should be aware of as long-term kind of trajectories in American religious life and in reporting on American religious life?
Well, I guess anybody would have to note the existence of what the sociologist Christian Smith refers to as moralistic therapeutic deism. And that's this fancy term he gave for a kind of lowest common denominator, watered-down Christianity that basically said, God loves us just the way we are. God wants us to be happy. That's about it.
Right.
We're supposed to treat everybody nice. And that's pretty much all that there is to faith. I'm sure you've seen studies that indicate that maybe 20% of American Catholics have doctrinal beliefs that line up with the catechism in any meaningful way at all.
Yes, right.
In terms of the practice of their faith. For Catholics, I would stress that I think the single most important undercovered story in my career has been the death of the sacramental system that includes confession.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea that confession to a spiritual father and the disciplines that go with that has anything whatsoever to do with the reception of the Holy Eucharist. That's a sacramental system. It's a whole. It's a body of doctrine. Yet, what are the figures for the percentage of American Catholics who go to confession? Isn't it down to something like 4%?
Yes, it is.
Go to
right.
confession even once a year, like say during Great Lent?
Right. Right.
Maybe the most I've ever heard is 10%.
No, I'm sure that it's less than that. I'm sure that I don't know, but the numbers I have heard are significantly less than 10%.
Yeah. So, but you find me a Catholic school that is producing vocations like St. Francis University in Steubenville, and you go there on a Saturday night and students are lined up outside the chapel waiting to go into confession.
Right, right.
Or there's a tremendous campus ministry, Catholic campus ministry, at Texas A&M University. And you see exactly the same phenomena. There is a connection between the holistic practice of a faith and whether or not it yields any results. even if that result is basically whether you're having children, whether you're having converts, and whether you're producing vocations.
And
you can't look at the story of Catholic life in America right now and not see that there is a connection between doctrine and demographics.
Right. And it's the replacement, as you said, with that, well, that therapeutic moralistic deism. I wonder if that's, I know that when we had Rod Dreher on, he spoke about that.
Yep.
And that has replaced a much richer religious life that came before it.
Yeah, it's the doctrine, it's the civil religion of what I call Oprah America.
Yeah.
Which is the big, mushy middle between the 20% of the American population that is actively attempting to practice some religious tradition and the 20 to 25% on, I guess you could say, on the cultural left that is either part of a liberal religious tradition or they're actively atheist or agnostic or that dreaded term, they're spiritual but not religious.
Right.
And that's a growing sector of American life. That's another major trend. And the tensions between those bookmarks on each side of the American population pretty much defines American politics and public life in the last 2 to 3 decades.
The side you are on that divide tells you who you're going to vote for and in many cases where you're going to live and how you're going to live and all that.
Well, you've seen the maps, the red versus blue maps broken down by counties. And to some degree, this is urban versus suburban and normal rural or heartland America. But that's just kind of how it breaks down. I mean, I'm spending 2 months or so a year now in New York, and I'm beginning to get to know New York. There's some incredibly exciting things happening in religion in New York City. Some intense pockets of revival and renewal in religious movements in New York City. You can't cover New York without seeing that. I mean, but just to give you an example, a church called Redeemer Presbyterian, led by a man named Tim Keller, not to be confused with Bill Keller that we discussed earlier. Tim Keller is one of the most important figures in evangelical and Calvinist Protestantism in recent decades, and he's built a church in New York City that now has thousands of people in it. I mean, it worships at multiple campuses scattered all over the boroughs of New York. Tim Keller announced his retirement a couple of weeks ago. That story has still not appeared in the New York Times.
Yeah, that's.
And this is a man whose books are on the New York Times bestseller list. They've written huge profiles of him. Yet somehow the fact that he's leaving, I guess maybe they're going to write the story his last day or something like that. But you can't cover New York without covering religion.
Yep.
And you can't cover the Bible Belt without covering religion. You can't cover the Lutheran Belt. If you don't get the tensions within Latino Catholicism, you know, and the degree to which Hispanics and Latinos practice their faith or don't, then you don't know anything about the future of Catholicism in America.
Yes.
You can't cover real life. You can't cover real events in the life of real people in the real world unless you take religion real seriously.
That should be our tagline.
Which is one of the catchphrases we've used to Get Religion.
GetReligion.org is the site. I highly recommend it to the listener, GetReligion.org. You'll learn something every day. They're also on Twitter. You can follow on Twitter what stories are being covered that day on, or even up to the hour on GetReligion.org. If you want Terry Mattingly's columns for decades, reaching decades into the past, tmatt.net, T-M-A-T-T.net. Terry Mattingly, founder of GetReligion.org, has been our guest. Terry, thanks very much for spending the time with us.
Glad to be here.
It was extremely helpful to us. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us on Catholic Answers Focus. We'll see you next time right here on Catholic Answers Focus.